Welcome to the Mindset Transformations Radio Show. I'm your host, Coach Myrna. And this week, we have a fabulous guest on our show talking about a subject that is near and dear to most of our hearts. Our topic today, it's not about willpower, how to lose weight without dieting. So stay tuned because you are in for some great information with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rockland. But in keeping with the theme of my show, what I like to do in the beginning is to give you a tip of the week. And my tip of the week coincides with my guest and her topic. So my tip today is talking about emotions and feelings, because we all know that emotions probably is the number one cause of eating disorders. Now, not sure if Dr. Nina is going to agree, but that's what I think, and of course, I am no expert. So what I want to share with you is that our brain responds to emotions and feelings. And I think Dr. Nina is going to teach us today about how emotions affect our eating. So we have positive and we have negative emotions in our daily lives. Positive emotions or feelings can be likened to yeast in a loaf of bread. They raise your energy levels so that you can attract like thoughts floating around in the universe. Thought impulses mixed with emotions are picked up quicker by infinite intelligence and acted upon. There are seven positive emotions, and these are the emotions that you want to try to cultivate in your life. They are desire, fate, love, sex, enthusiasm, romance, and hope. These are the most powerful emotions for creating wealth and happiness in your life. And then we get to the negative emotions. There are also seven negative emotions. Fear, the bottom feeder of all emotions. You got to get rid of fear. Jealousy, hatred, revenge, greed, superstition, and anger. So these are the negative emotions that are the cause of sickness, the extra pounds that you're carrying around with you, the stress in your life, anything that's bad can be traced back to having negative emotions linger in your life. So you see, positive and negative emotions cannot occupy the mind at the same time. One or the other must dominate. You must make sure that positive emotions constitute the dominant emotions of your mind. Form the habit of scanning your body to determine how you're feeling. If you find negative emotions, immediately shift to a positive thought. With practice, your positive emotions will dominate and the negatives cannot enter in. Negative emotions and feelings make you feel bad. Feeling bad is unnatural, so we try to eat something, drink something, buy something, or do something to make ourselves feel better. And this is the source of addictive behaviors. You need to kill the ants. Those are automatic negative thoughts. You know they come in, there's like 60,000 thoughts that come into our brains or heads every day. And most of them are negative, and most of them are repeating negative thoughts. So I wrote a blog about this a couple months ago, so you can check that out at blog.myhelps.us for more information on how to control your automatic negative thoughts. So enough about me, or enough about, you know, we are going to get to the main course of our show today. So let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Nina Savelle-Rockland. Dr. Nina is a psychoanalyst, an author, speaker, and internationally renowned expert in weight, food, and body image issues. She has been featured in the Los Angeles Times, Prevention, Real Simple, Huffington Post, and many other publications, and is a frequent guest on podcasts, radio shows, summits, and other events, including the prestigious National Meeting of the American Psychoanalytic Association. Dr. Nina's personal experience gives her a unique understanding of what it's like to struggle. She knows change is possible. She brings a fresh perspective by helping people understand why they turn to food instead of focusing on what they're eating. In addition to her private practice, she writes an award-winning blog, Make Peace with Food. Make sure you check that out. Hosts a popular podcast called Win the Diet War with Dr. Nina, and offers food for thought on her video series, The Dr. Nina Show. She has contributed to two psychoanalytic books, and her book, Food for Thought on the Treatment of Eating Disorders, is to be published by Roman and Littlefield later this year. Check out Dr. Nina on the web at www.winthedietwar.com. Well, welcome, Dr. Nina. I am so happy to have you on the show today and especially interested in your topic. How are you today?
I'm great. It is so great to be here talking with you. Thank you for having me.
Well, you are very welcome. All right. So we are going to dive right in. And, you know, we always set the tone in our show to understand the journey of our guests. How did they get to where they are today? So can you share with our audience your history and what led you to do this work?
Absolutely. And it goes back to when I was 5 years old. I suddenly randomly developed an obsession with my thighs. I thought that my thighs should be thinner, and I thought if my thighs were thinner, I would be perfect. And by the way, I was a perfectly normal weight, even thin kid. I wasn't watching any TV, and my mom and dad were more likely to read Time magazine than Glamour, so I wasn't getting any kind of media influences. But I became convinced that skinnier legs would somehow make me better. And this began an obsession that just got worse as I got older. And by the time I was an adolescent, I had full-blown eating disorder. My last thought at night was, what did I eat today? And I would fall asleep counting calories and fat grams and calculating every bite and wondering, am I gonna lose weight in the morning or gain it? And so the scale was my most welcome friend and my biggest enemy. And it just ruled my life. So when I went hiking with friends or did anything fun, dancing, I would focus on how many calories I was burning instead of how much fun I was having. And I would restrict, and then eventually I would binge and purge. I just went through so many cycles of anorexia, bulimia, binge eating, anorexia, bulimia, binge eating. So finally I went to therapy. And I shared my boyfriend issues, my goals, my dreams, my fears, my parents' stuff. I was open with my therapist about every aspect of my life except one. I never, ever told her what was going on with food. And I went once a week for 3 years. I never talked about what was going on. She had no idea that I was just in this eating disorder hell. And so... several months into therapy, I started noticing some changes. So restricting didn't make me feel superior or in control. It made me feel deprived. And eventually I started feeling, I guess you'd say, hungry for food, but really for life. And I became aware of feelings I denied. I learned to process emotions rather than to deny them. I used words to comfort myself instead of criticizing myself. And by the time I left therapy, I had zero eating disorder issues, zero unhealthy, unhappy relationship to food, and not once had I ever talked about food. So people say, "What? How do you get? How do you recover from three eating disorders that just consumed your life? Pardon the expression, without ever talking about it." And how it's possible is that it was the symptom. Whatever was going on with food was a symptom of the actual problem, which was my relationship with myself. And so instead of coping with an eating disorder, I learned different ways of coping with what was going on with me. And by the way, I think it's also important to note, why at age 5 did I randomly get this idea? Like, what's that about? And I realized later that as a child, my parents were these academic, kind of, you know, academic people, kind of even keel, quiet, and I was this rambunctious kid. And so I was constantly being told, oh, you're too loud, you're too sensitive, you're too dramatic, calm down. And the message was, you're too much. And so in my 5-year-old brain, mind, that became literally too much. There's too much of me. And so I think getting smaller was my way of, maybe if I'm smaller, I'll be more likable. So I know from experience what it is like to struggle with food, and I also know that you can completely liberate yourself from it. There is always hope.
Well, yeah, and that's basically why I chose the my tip of the week, because I just knew that somehow that's what we're going to cover, because, yeah, there is emotional eating, and we all know that. So that is awesome. Now, when you were telling me that story, I remembered two people that I heard something similar, and I was always very interested in that association. One was Princess Diana, who, as we know, had a terrible childhood and became bulimic as a result of that. And then Portia, I heard her, I saw her on the Oprah Winfrey Show once, and just exactly what you just talked about, obsession with calories. I heard her say that she would eat a yogurt a day because she went down to like 90 pounds. She would eat a yogurt a day, and even when she just ate that yogurt, she would be running around the parking lot to get rid of those calories. So it's an interesting cycle of how you feel about yourself and the calories and things like that. So I'm looking forward to understanding how we can, you know, somebody can bypass that. Any rebuttal in those two scenarios?
Well, whatever is going on, whether it's anorexia, bulimia, or overeating, or binging, or binge eating disorder, it's always a solution to the problem. People think it is the problem, but really, it's a solution to the problem. Something's going on that you cannot manage, and you're coping with this in this destructive way of coping.
And food, right? Yes. Okay. All right, well, that's an interesting start to our conversation, because I know you're going to tell me or tell our audience how we can fix this problem. So why don't we take a quick break, and we will be right back with the second segment of our show with Dr. Nina. Stay tuned. Be right back. Welcome back to the Mindset Transformation Radio Show. I'm your host, Coach Myrna, and today we are talking to Dr. Nina. In our first segment, Dr. Nina told us how she got fascinated by learning about food and emotions and triggers and things like that. So now we are going to get into the meat of our show. And I want to ask Dr. Nina, of course we know that every year there's a new fad diet, you know, low-carb Atkins diet. I was on it, gluten-free. Now, I think the gluten-free is because a lot of people are now allergic to gluten. Paleo. Now, why do you think that these diets don't work?
Well, The reality is that diets work until they don't, until you go off them. But basically, diets always fail because on some level, they're about deprivation, and that always leads to overeating or binging. And that's because the anticipation of not being able to eat what you want will make you want it more. And also, if you're thinking about not having pizza or pasta or ice cream or whatever today or for the next weeks until you get to your goal weight or months, then you've got pizza and pasta and ice cream on your brain all day, and that puts the focus on the wrong thing, which is what you're eating instead of why. So ultimately, diets fail because they only deal with food. They don't address the underlying conflicts that make you turn to food in the first place. And there are many reasons for that, you know, comfort, distraction, numbing yourself, and actually a lot more. And also, the cycle of losing weight by dieting and then regaining weight causes a lot of frustration, anxiety, sense of powerlessness, and often a feeling of failure. And so if you're using food to cope with painful feelings, the painful, upsetting experience of dieting can actually make things worse. But I think most importantly, dieting just keeps you in a battle with yourself. And when you stop dieting and start tuning into your thoughts, emotions, needs, wants, when you start attending to yourself in a different way, you lose weight naturally because you're not using food to cope. So by making peace with yourself, you make peace with food.
All right, but you mentioned that you went to a therapist in order to help with solve your problems. How would someone do that if they're not by themselves?
I went to therapy to talk about my anxiety, but I never talked about my eating disorder. She had no idea what was going on.
Solved the problem, though. Solve the problem because you talked about it. So let's say that somebody has these feelings or these problems with food and they don't go to their therapist. How can they fix it?
Well, I actually would like to talk about that I'd like to talk about what people think of as food triggers.
Okay.
Because what you think is a food trigger is actually indicating the true trigger, which is an emotion, need, or conflict. So most people know about emotional eating, and they're aware it's not what they're eating, it's what's eating at them. But they're so good at using food to avoid what's going on. Like, they don't even know that they're triggered. Let me just give you a quick example. I had a patient once, and she told me that maybe my other people had emotional or conflict, something that was causing them to turn to food, but she told me she was a food addict and that she was addicted to ice cream, and she could prove it. So I said, well, tell me. Prove it. Let's hear it. I'm all ears. And she told me that she had had a very good day at work and was chilling out at home watching TV. Nothing was bothering her. Nothing was wrong. And all of a sudden, as she put it, Ben and Jerry's was calling her name. She said, calling my name. I'm addicted to ice cream. So I said, well, not so fast. What were you watching on TV? So, her favorite show, Charmed. I asked what the episode was about. She started to tell me, it's when the devil comes and the sisters start fighting and everything gets crazy. And then she stopped and went, I get it. Because at that moment, she realized that watching this TV show, which was all about sisters fighting, had activated her own problems with her own sisters. But before she could even reach conscious awareness of that, she went to ice cream to cope. So if we'd been talking, and then she got mad at herself for eating ice cream, guess who she's actually mad at? Her sisters. So you can see that if we had just focused on ice cream, we would have missed the whole true picture. So I developed this formula to help people figure out, you know, what is eating at them, just as with this patient. So like her, foods that are sweet and smooth and creamy, like ice cream or frozen yogurt or pudding or something like that, those suggest a longing for comfort or soothing or nurturing. Foods that are filling, breads, pasta, cake, pizza, those are correlated to loneliness since they're bulky and they symbolically fill an internal void. When you're lonely, you feel empty, you feel empty, you fill it with food, done, except not really. So if you crave those types of filling foods, that's a clue you may be feeling deprived or lonely in some way, and you're using food to fill up. Foods that are crunchy, like chips or pretzels, anything with a crunch, that is associated with anger. So if those are the ones you turn to the most, that indicates that you may be angry, frustrated, annoyed, or some type of anger that you're taking out on food, and then you're probably getting angry at yourself for eating it, when maybe that anger belongs elsewhere. So the first key is to recognize, well, what is it that you're feeling? And then you cannot think away feelings. You cannot stuff down feelings. You cannot drop feelings. You cannot really positive think feelings away. First, you've got to acknowledge them. Like where positive thinking comes in, and I, you know, what you were saying earlier was these negative feelings, you've got to let them go, and I agree. But how do you do that? So the first thing is to recognize them. There's a lot of power in saying, yes, I feel this way, and of course I feel this way. And, you know, talk to yourself in a supportive way, which I will get to a little bit later. But first you got to know what's going on inside. And so what your main go-to food is, because everyone usually has one, they may say, oh, I'll eat anything in the fridge. But usually there's just one that's like their favorite thing. And that points to what needs to be resolved or attended to.
Yeah, that is good. My brain was worrying as you're talking about your triggers and all that. Yeah, I know about the ice cream because most people, you know, have this ice cream thing where when they're, you know, they're emotional, they eat the ice cream, and chips is another one. So I know somebody that can't stop eating chips, and I think I heard Oprah said the same thing. So you're saying that that's an anger. So these are all good things to know. And in coaching, what we do is teach awareness and teach consciousness. So, yeah, that's very important to know. The first time I've heard about the bread and pasta, which means that you're lonely and it's trying to fill you up kind of thing, because there's a lot of people that, you know, that one of my clients tells me that she can't stop eating bread as well. So, that is good to know that certain foods indicate what it is that you are unconscious trying to fill. So that's pretty good. So that is the best way to deal with the food triggers, is try to understand where they're coming from, I'm assuming?
It's the first step. First, you've got to know what's going on in you, what's eating at you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next step is how to deal with those underlying things. How do you soothe yourself? How do you feel your loneliness? How do you express your anger? How do you deal with what's going on inside? That's the first, you identify it that way, and then comes dealing with it.
Well, now this is going to be the most important answer of the day. So how do we do that?
Well, I'll tell you. One thing you have to do is silence your inner critic. But I'm going to get to that. I want to get to that later. I want to talk about the role of self-acceptance, because self-acceptance goes directly to your question. How do you do that?
Okay.
How do you take care of yourself? Sorry. How do you take care of yourself if you're used to turning to food to take care of you? And self-acceptance is key. And I want to define self-acceptance, which means balancing different parts of yourself, holding on to the things you like, along with the things that you'd like to change. And it is the cornerstone of your relationship to yourself and to others, because if you are self-critical and self-judgmental to yourself, then other people who are critical and judgmental of you may just seem like people who know you really well. And you can tolerate bad relationships because of your bad relationship to yourself.
Very true. Yeah. have no self-esteem, then you take anything. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And then conversely, if you are, when you like yourself, when you love yourself, when you accept yourself, which means accept the good and accept the bad, the not so good, then you won't, you will not let anyone in your life be close to you unless they treat you with respect. Because
yeah.
when you have self-respect, you, that's what you get, have an appropriate demand from others, self-respect. So all this notion of self, right? One of the things that I've realized in my work is that often when people think of their selves, they actually think only of their bodies. I had a woman told me that she was the queen of self-care. That was how she described herself. So why wasn't she feeling better? And she told me how she got manicures and facials and had her hair blown out and mani-pedis and all that. And she's like, I'm the queen of self-care. Why am I not happy? I said, well, that's not self-care. That's grooming. You're not happy because you're not nice to yourself. And she said, well, what other self is there?
She's not looking after the internal, just the external.
External, exactly.
Okay.
So it's important to think about, look, you wouldn't love your friends more if they lost weight. So why do you think you're going to be somehow better if you lose weight? You love your friends because they're nice, they're fun, they're warm, they're supportive, they're great people. That's why you like other people. And you have to accept that there's a range of qualities that make you the unique person that you are. So there are three ways to increase your sense of self-acceptance. And one is to accept the range of your emotions. Because if you're telling yourself things like, oh, and I hear this a lot, I am really oversensitive. I am so dramatic. Well, this comment attacks your feeling self. The message is, oh, I'm just too much for anyone to handle, or my feelings are a burden to others, kind of like when I was 5, that was the message that I was getting. And we live in a society that turns normal human reactions into something negative and bad, and we're always being told, be strong, don't give in to your emotions. You know, if you're sad, take an antidepressant. If you're anxious, there's a pill for that too. Even if you're angry, go to anger management class.
Management, right? Mm-hmm.
And now, if you're happy, maybe you're too happy. Maybe you're bipolar. I mean, you cannot win. So sometimes huge feelings, if you don't deal with your feelings, can be expressed as you feel huge. Like think about how we think about intense. Issues, they're said to be weighty issues, or that's a heavy kind of thought.
Yeah.
So
right.
Challenging the idea that feelings are somehow character flaws and just recognize that they are reactions to situations, not character flaws. Because if you don't feel your feelings, acknowledge them, express them in some way, then you're vulnerable to stuffing them down.
Right.
Second, it's so important to accept that perfection is unattainable. People say things all the time. I hear, oh, I can't stand my gross, squishy stomach. Oh, I'm so disgusting. Oh, my thighs are awful. I mean, the way they talk about themselves is horrible. And the underlying message is somehow you got to be perfect to be good enough. And when you objectify your body, your main relationship is to your body, to the number on the scale, and instead of to other people or to other parts of you. So really challenge the idea that there's some perfect you out there and accept the you that is, and you will feel much better about yourself. And it's hard to do, but practice makes progress. And then the third way to increase your acceptance of self is to trust the positive views that other people have of you. So when other people like you, accept you, admire you, and respect you, believe them. Often we disregard the good and kind of latch on to the bad, and then you never take in, literally, figuratively, never take in something good, and it leaves you empty and can't nurture yourself with words, because all you can give yourself are mean words, and then you nurture yourself with food. So when you feel good about yourself, it's easier to be good to yourself. So nurturing and self-acceptance is key.
Okay. Those are good. All right. So we've got to accept the range of our emotions, you know, realize that we're never going to be perfect, and look for the positive things that people feel about you. Yeah. That is, you know, that will take some work because normally, I mean, if somebody, like, you know, you're talking about your story with your tights, when you're looking at them, or you're looking into the mirror or something, a lot of times what you see is not what other people see. So it's good to, like, you would say I'm fat, and some people will say, you know, you're not, or you would say you're too skinny, and some people will say you're not. So what you're suggesting is take, you know, how other people feel about you and not necessarily what you see. Is that it?
Yeah, and often we have this filter that we filter out the good and focus on the bad. A friend
sure.
of mine, it was her birthday, and she told me she got something like 200 people wished her happy birthday on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And she said,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was nice, but I can't believe that so-and-so didn't wish me happy birthday on Facebook, right? So here's 200 people
said
happy birthday, and what is she thinking of?
The one person that didn't, right.
Mm-hmm. And when you realize
yeah.
you have that filter, and then you
yeah.
start recognizing how much you filter out, then you
yeah.
start letting it in.
Yeah, right. Okay, so that's good. All right, so if our listeners want to make the change, what are some of the things that they can do to create this change of, you know, I'm assuming that we're talking about self-respect and self-esteem.
Yes. I'm going to give you a practical thing to do right away, and I'm going to give you new ways of relating to yourself that will take practice, but they are effective. So the first thing that you can do, the most practical thing that you can do, is throw out your scale. That bathroom scale is a tyrant. It does not measure your value. It ruins your day. It has too much power over you. And throwing it out and getting it out of your life is a very powerful stance that you can take on your own behalf. Because too many people get on the scale and their day is ruined from that moment on. It does not measure.
Especially if you're trying to get that weight off and it's not going anywhere.
Right.
If you're not trying, then you really can't be mad. Right. Okay.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So then now I'm going to talk about the other strategies, which is silencing your inner critic and responding to yourself in a different way. So if you've ever said anything to yourself like this, like, you've got no willpower, you're not good enough, you're never going to lose weight, I'm such a loser, things like that. If any of that sounds familiar, that is your inner critic. And that critic is horrible. It makes you feel terrible. And you know what? If that's the way you talk to yourself, you might just be eating to escape your own mean voice. So it's very important to get rid of that inner critic. And one quick way of identifying it is to catch when you talk to yourself in second person, like when you say, you're a loser, rather than I'm a loser.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, someone was recently said this last week. She said she was at a party, and there was all this really good food there. I guess the people had it catered, a gourmet place. And the way she put it, she said, I decided this just wasn't the time to worry about what I was eating, so I just ate what I wanted. And afterwards, I thought, you are such an idiot. You're never going to lose weight. I can't believe you did that. So notice the way she talked to herself. She switched from, I ate what I wanted, to you. And when I asked her to say, I'm such an idiot, she couldn't do it. She said it felt too harsh.
Mm.
And she was right. It was harsh. So as you can see, just changing the way you talk to yourself, just using a simple change of word, first person rather than second person, can be very powerful. So instead of being critical, you have to learn to be kind to yourself. And that you do that by responding to yourself in comforting, soothing, acknowledging, and validating words instead of food. When we talk about comfort, food, but when we talk about that, we're really expressing a wish to be comforted.
Mm.
So a good rule of thumb is this, with just one last word about the critic. If you wouldn't say it to a friend, a child, or someone you loved, don't say it to yourself.
Hmm.
So
okay.
imagine you have a friend who's upset. So maybe they had a fight with their husband, or they had a bad day at work, whatever the case, they're upset. And do you say to them, you're upset? Here, eat this pizza until you feel sick. You know, no, of course not. You would say something like, oh, I'm sorry. That's really tough. I'm sorry you had a bad day. How can I help? Which sounds good, right? But the first way is exactly how most people talk to themselves. Oh, I'm upset. Oh, let me eat something. I don't want to feel this. Instead of acknowledging it, you need to acknowledge what you're feeling and asking yourself what you would need. And I promise you, it is much more effective and feels much better than calling yourself names. Another way to be nicer to yourself is to really take care with your tone. So the same words can feel very different depending on what tone you use. Now, one of my patients came in, and she told me that she had tried talking to herself, and it didn't work. She's like, I tried it. It didn't work at all. That doesn't work. Can you just tell me what you said? Just tell me exactly what you said to yourself and how you said it. And this is what she said. She goes, all right, I said to myself, I'm all right. This won't last. It'll be okay. Well, no wonder she didn't feel better. That is not very comforting. You know, kind of a flat, cold tone does not help. But you can say the same words in a different tone, and it feels completely different. You could say, I'm all right. This won't last. It will be okay. Right? Tone is essential. I just said the same thing she said, but in a different way, just a different tone. And
in a comforting tone, right.
Yeah,
okay, I got you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a soothing tone feels like a verbal hug. So if you're upset and you say to yourself, oh, get over it, or, you know, I don't want to, you know, just stop it, that's not going to help. And there's the ice cream. If you're upset and you say, yeah, you know what, I'm upset, this feels bad, I'm not going to always feel this way, but of course I do. What do I need right now? How can I help myself? Do I need to, you know, watch some cozy TV show like Friends? Or, you know, that's what Friends is like. Oh, you can't watch Friends and be upset.
True. Yes.
What do I need? Then you're responding to yourself with words instead of food. So talk to yourself as you would talk to someone you care deeply about. And by stopping criticism and cultivating interest and support and kindness, you comfort yourself with words, you support yourself with words, and when that happens, you don't use food for comfort.
Well, that's pretty good on several levels. One, we're talking about not making you reach for that food, but two, if you're lonely or you're needing a partner or you're needing comfort, what you're realizing is that you can do it for yourself. You're learning to be okay with just you by comforting yourself. And that's all part of, you know, going inside and meditating and you know, those things. So that is pretty good.
I'm glad you think so. It does help. It does help. It feels awkward at first. Like any change, it feels awkward. Like the first time you do anything, whether you learn to play the piano or go to the gym, it feels awkward. It feels weird. You got to think a lot. It feels wrong.
Yeah.
It even hurts. And then eventually, the more you do it, the more automatic it comes. And then you just sit down to the piano and play, and you're not thinking. Or you go to the gym and you do whatever you do. You're not thinking. So you can completely change the way you respond to yourself, and it becomes very organic. It doesn't feel that way at first, but it will.
It's true. It does get easier. Anything, you know, even the automatic negative thoughts. In order to get over those negative feelings, you've got to, when you get them, replace them with something positive. You know, reach for better thoughts. So it's the same thing. It's going to take practice, and then all of a sudden, you know, the muscle is going to be there, and you're going to see change. So that's awesome. All right, now let's ask about a lot of people lose weight and gain it back, or they're always in a yo-yo diet cycle. What causes people to sabotage their weight loss efforts?
You know, there are 5 main reasons for diet sabotage, and I'll talk about a couple of them. One of them is, so fears of expectation, fears of failure, fears of objectification, impulsivity, and the last one, which is going to surprise you, I won't name it yet. So fears of expectation. So a lot of people have big expectations of what's going to happen after they lose weight. You know, oh, I'll finally start dating, I'll get a better job, I'll have kids, I'll travel, whatever it is, whatever they're waiting for, they think they're going to do. And so the belief is once they lose weight that, you know, all these things are going to happen. Life is going to change. Sometimes they think their personality will change by losing weight. If they're insecure, they're going to become confident. If they're shy, they'll become outgoing. The problem is, what if that doesn't happen? Because it doesn't. Everything in your life stays the same when you lose weight, except for the label size on your clothes. And maybe you feel a little confident in certain ways at first, but it doesn't change your whole personality. And when you realize you can't actually control the world by losing weight, you can't resolve a psychological conflict by changing your body, you can feel good about your weight loss, but you will not become a different person. You'll be yourself, just smaller. And so sometimes as people lose weight, they start feeling these expectations, and then they know, like, wait, I still don't want to do that, or I still feel insecure, or I still feel shy. As long as you think, when I lose weight, I'll be this, that is sometimes more compelling than realizing weight loss is not going to solve your problems. Another one that's related is fear of failure, right? So when you lose weight and then people have expectation of you, what if you can't measure up? That becomes very scary. Fear of objectification, you know, I've had a couple of people who've said this to me, but the most poignant one who said it was a 13-year-old girl who was maybe 200 pounds overweight.
Wow.
And she said to me, she told me eventually she was afraid to lose weight. And she said, well, bad things don't happen to fat girls.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And there's this sense of when people lose weight, that they'll be objectified, they'll be sexualized, people will like them for their bodies and not for themselves. They could be attacked. I mean, all of these.
Reversal of the norm?
Yeah. Yep. So they don't want to feel like a body or a thing, and so they get scared because inevitably you lose weight and people start saying, oh, you look good. Oh, look at you.
Right, yeah.
Sexy
right,
you.
Okay.
Oh, the guys are going to come after you, or oh, your husband must, or whatever it is. And that is very scary for people when they're afraid of what that body means.
Hmm.
Another one is fear of impulsivity. I have lots of people who lose the same pounds over and over and over. So one of them, Jane, she lost the same 30 pounds over and over and over. She'd lose weight, she'd celebrate her loss by eating, and then she wouldn't stop until she regained those 30 pounds.
Oh, you're kidding.
Nope. Over and over, lots of people I see this with. Now, her problem wasn't willpower. She could stay on a diet. Her problem was her fear of what would happen if she stayed skinny. And that fear was that if she was thin, she would leave her husband. said that she's not happy in her marriage, and there was some fear of if I get men and guys start noticing me and I feel good about myself, I'm gonna do.
Huh.
Right. Now the last one, the one that people are surprised by, is fear of happiness. Now, first, this does not make sense, right? People say,
no.
What do you mean? I'm miserable. Of course I'll be happier if I lose weight. But if you dig a little deeper, there are often anxieties attached to happiness. Lots of people are afraid to be, quote, unquote, too happy in case it's taken away from them. You know, like the rug's going to be pulled out from under their feet, as if by daring to be happy, they're inviting punishment from the universe.
Wow.
So as long as they're not too happy, no one can take their happiness away, right? It's not logical, but it's psychological. And there's also sometimes there's a positive meaning associated with unhappiness, like true artists must suffer, or it's noble to suffer. It makes you a better person. And so then when you start to get really happy about your weight loss and feel good, really good about yourself, another part of you can say, oh, you're getting a big head. Who do you think you are? You know? So I find that fear of happiness is a big thing that people use to sabotage themselves unbeknownst to themselves. These are all unconscious. No one realizes that they're thinking.
So this whole conversation has been about weight is psychological, which is why you're a psychoanalytical. That's where your doctorate in.
Yes.
So it's never the food. It's never what we eat. It's all psychological.
Yes. When you are using food to resolve a psychological conflict. You know, some people overeat because they don't know about portion size, or they don't know what's healthy or what's unhealthy, which seems hard to believe in this day and age, but it's true.
Right.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when you're eating to cope with something.
Yeah.
Many, many people.
Yes. Yes. Women especially, correct?
Women, but you know, many men. I treat a lot of men, and I treat people from, 20s through 70s. And I see a lot of guys in their 40s, 50s, 60s who've been struggling with food one way or another for decades, but they always thought it was a women's issue. So they're finally starting to come forward and try to get some help. It's a human issue, but, yes, it is much more with women.
Prevalent with women. Okay. Well, that was great information. Let's take our last break, and we will be right back with Dr. Nina. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Mindset Transformation Radio Show. I'm your host, Coach Myrna, and today we have been speaking with Dr. Nina, and we have had a great conversation on using food to stuff our emotions. You know, we talked about three ways to help with your range of emotions, perfection, some positive views. Then Dr. Nina gave us some practical tips. One of them is throw out that scale. It has too much power. And then we talked about silence in your inner critic. And never, the way you talk to yourself, the tone that you use to talk to yourself. So we went through all the psychological reasons that, so that you can not use food as a way to feel better, which is basically what I was talking about in the beginning of the show. So as we wrap up now with Dr. Nina, Dr. Nina, I know that you have a book that's coming out. You've got a blog. You've got a website. So tell our audience how they can get some more of your great information.
I would be happy to. Well, they can go on my website, which is winthedietwar.com, and they can access my blog or Make Peace with Food. They can go on iTunes and access my podcast, Win the Diet War with Dr. Nina. And they can go on YouTube and do a search for the Dr. Nina Show, Lose Weight Without Dieting. And they can contact me through my website if they have any questions. I also have an online program, and I answer all my emails personally. Maybe not, may take a little bit of time for me to get back to you, but I really believe in answering everyone who writes to me. So if you have any questions, feel free to email me through my site.
Okay. That is awesome. And yes, and you have your book that's going to be coming out, I think you said, is it the end of the year?
It's coming out in December. It's called Food for Thought.
Okay. Awesome. And obviously that's going to be available on Amazon?
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, as we wrap up, I want to thank you so much for being on the Mindset Transformation Radio Show, Dr. Nina. And you have definitely transformed our mind on food. You know, we all think that, using food as far as dieting, I mean, I could sworn you were going to be talking about, you know, some other issues about why people don't stay on diets. And we're all understanding now that it's all psychological. It's how you think about yourself. It's all emotional eating, of course, or, you know, some people, you know, the greedy ones, but we're not. That's not what we're talking about here. So, yes, become conscious. Understand why you're doing something. When you reach for that piece of cake at the end of the night, realize that before you take that piece of cake or whatever it is, whether it's bread, like Dr. Nina said, or ice cream or something, become conscious of what exactly you're feeling and what you're hoping that this food is going to fill. And that is the first step, consciousness. And then, of course, you can get some other information from Dr. Nina. Of course, we only talked here for about 45 minutes, but there's lots of questions that you can ask her if you have some specific things. So, again, thank you, Dr. Nina, for being on our show. And I hope that that our audience was able information. Tune in next week to the Mindset Transformation Radio Show at this time at 5 p.m. every Wednesday. You can also reach me, my shows as well, on my YouTube channel. Search for My Helps. Or you can visit my website, which is MyrnaYoungHelps.com. And that website would have all the list of all my shows and my video blogs. So once again, thanks for tuning in, and you guys have yourself a pleasant evening. Bye.